10:51 here on Zolak and Bertrand. Let's go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in the head coach of the Boston Celtics. Brad Stevens is with us. Hi, Brad.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Sorry about that. Good, coach. How you doing? Last night, first time, before we get to the game, first time you guys have had fans in the building, and I heard you after the game said you got a little emotional over it. How different was it based on how things have been trending for you guys playing in front of empty buildings?
Well, we've played in front of a lot of buildings with 2,000 fans because most of our road games in the past 2 months have had fans. But, you know, it has never felt like that. And I think the other part of it is, Scott, when like coming back after playing, you know, 4 or 5 road games in a row and it's 2,000, 2,500, 3,000, whatever people are having their arenas, and then coming back to just an empty gym has been – you know, you can feel the difference, right? And then, you know, our 2,000 feels like 10,000 at other places because of the way that our fans are and how engaged they are and how loud they are. And so it was great from that perspective. But what I was saying yesterday was, you know, this thing has flipped everybody, right, in the last year, and it's been awfully difficult in every which way. And, you know, I know that, you know, we're in the middle of the director of the CDC coming out and saying that, hey, we've got to do everything we can to buckle down to avoid a fourth wave here. And at the same time, just seeing people in there, like, gives you hope. And so I think that we all felt that. And, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, we can get through this with a minimal wave and we can have life back to normal as soon as possible. But, you know, anything that resembles that, I think, you know, makes you feel a little bit better about the direction you're headed.
Quickly off that, and you've coached a lot of games in that building when it's humming and it's jumping and you know how your team reacts to that. Do you think this team, the way it's constructed this year, would respond differently if the building was packed every night? And I'm talking about at home.
Well, we've been better at home, you know, as far as like home and road. I mean, I think we're 13-7 or 13-8 at home. And obviously that's better than what we are on the road. And so I don't know that, I don't know how this team would be different. It's hard to predict, but I think you always get a huge jolt from our home crowd. And so there's no question that, you know, this is part of the allure of playing in Boston, part of the how special it is, are those facilities, right? Fenway and Gillette and TD Garden, and how loud it gets and how passionate the fans are. And to have that as not part of the experience over the last year, and for, you know, anybody that's joined our team for the first time this year, I think is they have no idea what's coming. And so it's nice to just even have a percentage of that.
Coach, we haven't talked to you since the trade deadline, and last week I heard your pregame interview with Sean Grandy. You sounded pretty surprised that Daniel Theis got traded. Did you not see that one coming?
You know, I didn't, but, you know, I knew that our front office had to make at least one roster move because we acquired Fournier. So, and, you know, I don't know what all goes into that. I know that they were on the phones all that week, and there were probably several iterations of a move. But I actually didn't know until 20 minutes after the deadline. We were getting ready to meet as a team. And, you know, rightfully so, Danny and Mike and all those guys are on the phone probably right up until 3:00 Eastern. And so they've got to, you know, get all the deals agreed to, communicate to the league, communicate with each other, make sure they get all their stuff in a row, and then they call me and tell me kind of what happened. And so that was the challenge was obviously losing three guys that were really well liked in our locker room. Jeff Teague, Devontae Green, Daniel Theis, all really well liked, all I thought really worked, good people, did a good job when called upon. And I think any time that happens that quickly, right, as you walk into a team meeting, there's going to be emotions, and you could see it on our players. What we did in that moment was simply do what we always have done our whole lives when, you know, you haven't felt great as far as like just trying to wrap your arms around everything. That's just, we just went to the gym and shot, and we just literally, you know, I almost felt like we were just out there and it was everybody just go do what you need to do to realize that, you know, okay, we've made these changes. These changes can help us in a lot of ways. It's hard to lose the teammates that you really liked and enjoyed, but let's get ready to play the next night. And to our guys' credit, I think that they, you know, were respectful of everybody that left, and rightfully so. Again, great guys, and at the same time turned the page and got ready for Milwaukee and played well at the back end of that trip.
Were you right away thinking about maybe what some of the challenges are of losing Tice and having more new players to sort of integrate into the roster? And I saw Sean Grandy had a great stat last night about Fournier being the 78th different player that has been on the Celtics roster since you've become head coach. This is not new territory for you. You've had this going on pretty much every year that you've been here.
Here's the crazy part, though. 42 of those were in the first 18 months. So, it hasn't been, you know, the 1 year when we made the Kyrie trade, we had four of our 15 guys were back. That was the biggest change of roster in the off season that we've ever had. But other than that, the in-season stuff, we haven't made a lot of changes other than maybe adding a 10-day or adding a buyout late in the season. So it has been a while since we've done the trade deadline. You know, I think you think of it two ways. Okay, number one, how does it shift your lineups? How does it shift your rotations? And, oh, by the way, we still haven't had everybody yet, right? Even last night, missing Jalen and Tristan. Like, we don't know how it – and Romeo and Shemi. We don't know how it's all going to look when it's all together. And I hope – I just crossing my fingers that we get a chance to see it all together. But – you know, then you think about, okay, how does it change rotations and how do guys get affected by that new role? You know, like a good example is Rob. This is a great opportunity for Rob to play more minutes. It's harder to be a scorer in the first unit. You know, most of our scorers are out on the floor. You're playing against the best fours and fives. It's not a surprise to me that, you know, his numbers from a scoring standpoint through three games are a little bit lower in field goal percentage than they have been coming off the bench. It's just a different challenge. Right. But defensively and passing the ball and everything else, you know, he'll probably go up in those areas, defensive rebounding and assists and those type of things because of who he's playing with. How does that tweak how your team works, how it best functions? If you can score enough off the bench, which should be now addressed as well, I think it's obviously Evan who, you know, had when he's old and gray 50 years from now, he's going to laugh about that first game. But hopefully we can find a rhythm to our whole team and find a way that we can best maximize everybody.
Yeah, you mentioned Rob with the defense too. And is that a thing too for you defensively? And I know you're upset about it. I heard you in the post game and you said, we haven't been good all year on defense. And it's one thing here, one thing there. And Danny was on last week and talking about a single guy misses an assignment and if all five are on the same page, what does that fall under and who's responsible for that? Is it the players at that point? Because I'm sure you've instructed them on what to do.
You know, I never think there should be any excuses on defense. Defense is a team responsibility. And so, you know, obviously, and obviously that would be as much on me as anybody else, because I think that we've always had good defenses here and we haven't always had what people would have considered to be a defensive personnel group. Right. Even last year, I think people thought going into the year that we would struggle defensively and, you know, that group was really bought in. Now, we were a little bit more versatile, not much. And we had, you know, we were, for the most part, with the exception of the Hayward wrist and then the ankle and then Rob missing most of the season, we were pretty healthy, you know. And so I think that some of those things play into account. We need everybody to be their best on that end. We need everybody to be 100% engaged all the time. And hey, that is a little bit more of a challenge if you're a guy that's being asked to do everything on the other end. But that's the responsibility of the whole team. A great team, you know, can lay its foundation on that end of the floor because, you know, you have to work together. And in this NBA, with the way that the ball moves, with the way the spacing is, with the quickness of the bigs and the skill of the bigs, like, it is even more important to be on a string. We're not far away in reality from being a top you know, 8-10 defense. In fact, and since the trade deadline in the last three games, if you just did the math on those three games, we would be. But, you know, that's something you have to choose every day. You know, it's one of my old assistants who's now the head coach at Penn State, Michael Shrewsbury, played for a guy in college, and he said, you're good if you play good. And so it doesn't matter what your defensive reputation is when you enter the game as a team. You have to do it every single night when the score starts 0-0.
Last night, Marcus Smart had a little bit of a mental lapse for a moment, and when his teammates just wanted to fill him in on what had gone wrong, he seemed pretty upset. Has he figured out what it was that went wrong there on that play by now, hopefully?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest thing about that is not the mistake. I mean, people make mistakes. It was just our overall team response over the next 12 minutes. You know,
yeah.
That's where we need to get to a different level. Like, you know, just be able to move on. You know, we had played pretty well in that third quarter. We had tied it right out of the gate after being down 9. They went on a little mini run. We came right back and cut it to 2 or 4. And then, you know, just make a mistake. And then that's okay. Just don't compound it as a team. And we compounded it as a team. And, you know, probably didn't help just the timing of it. You know, I think that we went to the bench, and then you go right to the bench and you put it on those guys to kind of manage that. And that's difficult for them. And, but I was pleased with how we responded after that in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the game. But that's the margin when you're talking winning and losing.
How are you going to stop Zion in 5 years? I mean, you watch him last night.
How are you going to stop him now?
But when he hits, yeah. You know, when he hits his prime, you know, like when LeBron hit his prime, he's so explosive down inside in traffic, and he's 6'5", 6'6". He's not 6'10".
That's the strongest 4-5 combo I've ever seen. Because if before Zion got in the league, if you would pull the players, there would be a strong argument that Adams is the strongest guy in the league. Like, all the bigs are like, that guy is a truck. He, when he hits people, and I think about, like, you know, I understand they didn't call it at the end of the game, but, like, I don't think people understand when Smart gets hit by him, like, he's gonna get
laid out
to the ground.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have pads on. Like, that takes a lot of guts to stand in there and take that when a guy runs right through you like that. But Zion is, I mean, you want to try to stop him from getting to his left hand. He's so unique and quick to that left hand. I've always thought those shifty, quick lefties had a little bit of an advantage because there's a uniqueness to that left kind of extra step and reach that guys aren't used to. But, yeah, he's a handful. I mean, there are very few guys that you go through in this league, and it's like, man, you better have 5 or 6 different ways that you're going to play every game against him. Because if you get into a playoff series against him and he sees 1 or 2 things, by the end of it, he's going to be destroying everybody.
Well, best of luck with that going forward.
And it's Hardy's 50th birthday today, Coach.
Is it really?
Yeah, we're getting old, man. We've been doing this a while now.
Well, he's not on, right?
No, I'm here. Sir.
He's eating cake.
I was thinking about how dumb I was to think. No, I didn't. I was thinking about how dumb I was thinking about Zion before he came in the league and thinking about he really can't shoot. Like, the trajectory on his shot is all off. He's not going to make it. He doesn't need to shoot from
the
outside.
It's not a normal dookie.
He can lower the head shoulder and go in. And like you said, when he finishes with his left, like, if I were you, I wouldn't even bother losing sleep over it. You're not going to stop that. What are you going to do?
No, there's,
just leave it alone.
Something. I mean, you're first of all, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Secondly, you know, it's nice of those guys to give you the first 10 minutes of this conversation off on your birthday.
Well, we were having serious basketball conversation.
He was checked out.
I wasn't even going to interrupt.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you're right about Zion. I guess the combination of size, and when you talk size, just brute strength, right? And you can't get around him. And the burst, I mean, I've never seen it. And so, and I think, I'm sure LeBron obviously is, what, 260, 265, and 6'8". Zion seems to be a little bit smaller, shorter, but heavier. And, man, when he hits that paint, you can't stop him from getting the ball up. And so I think when you start talking about, like, the most physical drivers in the league, you know, I think that you know, certainly LeBron's shooting more threes than ever, but he's always going to be in that conversation. But I think that Giannis and Zion are, you know, two that stand out more than anybody else.
Yeah.
All right, Coach. Appreciate the time, as always. Thank you.
We do.
Thanks.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, guys. Be well. Happy birthday.
Brad Stevens, Celtics head coach, here on Zolak and Bertrand on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.